Chapter 13. Stars, hide your fires. The stateroom he had been given on Resolute was certainly a step up from the brig on the Trade Federation flagship, but that didn't make it any less of a prison. Resolute had a brig, too, but Bail Organa's position as Prince Consort of Alderaan rated him a stateroom, albeit a small one. Captain Yularen, the flotilla commander, had even come by to introduce himself and offer Bail the services of Resolute's sickbay and medical staff. Since Newt Gunray hadn't had any particular enmity against Bail, he'd been more or less left alone on Sakak and hadn't needed it, but he had appreciated the offer.
Exiting hyperspace in 1 minute,
the ship's communications watchstander announced over the comm system.
All personnel prepare for immediate combat upon entry to real space.
Bail had been watching a holovid in one of the stateroom's virtual displays, all of which had been carefully reconfigured so that he had access to Resolute's entertainment catalog, but not the holonet or the ship's data. As much as Bail would have liked to know what was going on in the Republic following the secession of the Delegation of 2000 and the attack on Naboo, he was selfishly glad that he didn't have to talk to Brea just yet. He'd already recorded half a dozen messages for her, though he didn't know if he'd be permitted to send any of them. None of them sounded right, and all of them came down to, Brea, I'm sorry. He paused the holovid, a thriller he remembered from his boyhood, because there was no better time to watch comfort movies than when you were on your way to a trial for treason and espionage, and leaned an elbow on the desk, bracing himself for the re-entry to real space. There hadn't been any trouble yet during the dozen or so jumps in and out of hyperspace they had made so far, but neither Captain Yularen nor the Jedi were complacent enough to believe that there wouldn't be. Bail wasn't sure whether or not to hope there was. The Confederacy and the Republic weren't the only powers in the galaxy, and even if Confederate forces did engage the flotilla, there was a good chance Resolute would be destroyed rather than boarded. Bail knew Padme Amidala pretty well. She wouldn't tell the rest of the Confederacy that Obi-Wan was missing unless she had no choice. Unless he got supremely lucky and they were intercepted by one of the Naboo fleets, no one was going to come looking for him. He felt the familiar tightness shiver across his skin and then dissipate, as Resolute left hyperspace. Sighing, Bail reached for the virtual display, meaning to start the holovid as soon as they received the now-familiar notification of how long it would be until they re-entered hyperspace, then froze as an alarm began to sound in his stateroom, shockingly loud in the confines of the small room. More alarms rang in the corridor outside, echoing through the ship.
Action stations. Action stations. Assume Condition 1 throughout the ship. Action stations.
Bail had been around enough sailors, including the usual year serving on board one of the Alderaanian Planetary Defense Forces gunships, to know what that meant. The Republic flotilla was under attack. Stumbling, as at least one shot got through Resolute's shields, Bail pushed himself to his feet and crossed the stateroom to hit the comm panel next to the hatch. "What's going on out there?" he demanded, as the face of one of the Marines on duty outside his stateroom appeared on the small vidscreen.
"We're under attack, sir,"
said the Marine Corporal.
"Yes, I noticed that," Bail said dryly. "By whom? And how can I shut off this blasted alarm?" Since he could hear it sounding in the hallway, there didn't seem to be much sense in having to listen to it in the close confines of the stateroom if he didn't have to.
"Don't know, sir, but the alarm's the blue button on the comm panel, sir,"
said Corporal Lai.
Just stay put, sir. There's no danger.
Well, I wasn't exactly planning on going anywhere, Bale said, which made Lai smile. He shut off the transmission, then tapped the blue button, which took care of the alarm in his room. With nowhere to go and nothing to do, he returned to his desk and sat down, though he shut down the virtual screen. There was no way for him to tell what was going on outside his stateroom, not without access to the ship's sensors. Bale could only guess and hope that when the end came, it came fast. He hoped that someone would tell Brea he was dead, that he had succeeded in what he meant to do. He didn't want her to wait for him forever. Over the next 20 minutes or so, Resolute shook under the force of multiple hits. Bale had no idea how much firepower it took to overcome a Star Destroyer. He wished that he had bothered to find out at some point. He had never considered that he might actually have to know. For lack of anything else to do, and because he thought it might keep him from thinking about his very likely fate, he started to record another message to Brea, while trying to slice his way into the ship's systems, hoping he could get the transmission out before the end came. Brea, he began, while his fingers flew over the keyboard, trying to find a way to break in. I hope you get this. I hope you don't. That sounds crazy, doesn't it? I don't want to die. I don't want to leave you alone, especially with all this hanging over us, but if I do... I'm sorry. We both knew that it could end like this, even if we never wanted it to, but we made that decision together. I don't regret it. I hope you don't either. I love you, Brea Antilles. He caught himself on the edge of the table as the ship shook, just barely escaping, obliterating a line of computer code. I love you. And I know you'll do what's right. I know you'll finish what we started. He had barely finished speaking when a different alarm began to scream in the corridors outside his stateroom. Bale didn't know what that meant, but it couldn't be good. He bent over the keyboard with renewed fervor, desperate for a backdoor into the ship's communication systems. Bale had been working on it for a few minutes, virtually certain that he was almost through, when he realized abruptly that he was hearing shooting. Not from whoever was bombarding Resolute. The vast distances of most fleet actions made that impossible. The shooting was coming from inside the ship. They had been boarded. For a moment, Bale felt his throat close in sheer panic, because he didn't know what that meant. It could be good, it could be bad, it could be very, very bad. He knew that pirates were active in the Midrim, flourishing in the chaos caused after the Republic had been forced to pull out of Separatist systems. Naboo and the other Confederate systems with space navies had done what they could to fill the gap, but they were often busy with fighting. Except no pirate would be stupid or suicidal enough to attack a Republic flotilla. Bale lifted his hands from the keyboard to press his fingers to his forehead, massaging the skin just above his eyes. Even with his eyes closed, he could still see the computer code he had been trying to slice through. Stars, let me not die without getting this message out to Brea. With that thought in mind, Bale started typing again, bending a little of his attention towards trying to track the progress of the shooting in the corridors. He was almost certain that it was coming closer. He almost didn't realize when he finally broke through the encryption. Blinking, Bale stared at the virtual screen in front of him, which was theoretically a mirror of the communication screens up on Resolute's bridge. His hands shaking slightly, Bale set up a data burst to Alderaan, bouncing it around enough Holonet realized that the original position would be pretty thoroughly spoofed, then compressed all of his recorded messages to Brea into a single file and, with a single flick of his finger, sent them on their way. He didn't bother trying to hide what he was doing from Resolute's comms officers, but he suspected that they had more important things to worry about right now. After a moment's hesitation, he started to set up a second data burst to Naboo. There wasn't much to say, and Bale was trying to figure out how to say it, when he suddenly realized that the shooting was very close indeed. He jerked around, standing up and reaching for the back of his chair, which was bolted to the floor and useless as a weapon. There was shouting out in the corridor, followed by the quick retort of several blasters, and then a moment of silence. Bale drew in his breath, glad that he had gotten the data burst off to Alderaan. He jumped as someone banged on the hatch. Then the comm panel beside the door buzzed. Swallowing, Bale crossed the room to tap it, trying to compose himself as an unfamiliar face appeared on the small vidscreen. Human, female, and wearing battle armor from the neck down, as far as he could tell.
"Prince Consort Bail Organa?"
she asked, and he almost fell over in relief when he heard the light Naboo accent. "Yes," he managed to say. "Who am I speaking to?"
"Master Sergeant Eleni Kaber, Royal Naboo Marine Corps, off the Battlestar Indomitable of the Naboo First Fleet, Your Highness,"
the Marine said, her tone polite but hurried.
"Can you open the door from the inside?"
"No, I'm locked in."
"All right, Your Highness, hang tight. We're going to override the door controls, but it might take a few minutes."
Somewhere in the background, Bale heard another Marine protest.
"Top, I can do it in 30 seconds. "Well, then get over here and do it, Coyle."
Master Sergeant Cobber nodded shortly to Bale. Then the vid screen shut off, and Bale stood back. He shifted nervously from foot to foot, barely able to believe his luck. 20 seconds later, the hatch swung open. Bale grinned in relief, trying not to look at the bodies of the Republic Marines on the floor in the corridor. "Am I glad to see you?"
"Likewise, Your Highness," said Master Sergeant Copper, pulling her helmet back on.
When she spoke again, her voice had the faintly artificial quality bestowed by the voice modulators in battle armor. "We've already recovered Viceroy Gunray. Do you know where Captain Kenobi is being held?"
"The Jedi were holding him on their cruiser. It's docked in Resolute's secondary hangar."
There was a beat of hesitation that Bale didn't like. Then Cobber said,
"All right, Your Highness, let's get you back to Indomitable. Stay close to us and keep your head down. We're still securing the ship."
Bale nodded.
"The Trade Federation ships?" he said.
"Blown out of the sky." Her voice was cold.
"This way, Your Highness."
There was evidence of hard fighting in the narrow corridors of Resolute, and Bale and the Marines had to step over fallen bodies on the way, both Republic sailors and battle-armored Naboo Marines and sailors. Bale tried not to look too closely, letting his eyes go slightly out of focus. Resolute was massive, well over a kilometer in length and half that at its widest point, and had a crew of several thousand. He hoped that the Naboo troops hadn't killed everyone, but he couldn't imagine what they would do with the survivors if they hadn't. The Naboo ships, the big Battlestar Indomitable, and two battlecruisers, which, according to the clone Marine Coyle, were called Valiant and Revenge, were connected to Resolute at a number of airlocks by extendable pressure tunnels, through which Naboo Marines and sailors were still pouring. Bale was hustled through one of these onto Indomitable, feeling relief light in his chest the moment he stepped off the Republic ship and onto the Confederate one. The Marines didn't slow their pace as they hastened him through the narrow, winding corridors of the Battlestar. Sailors in Naboo fleet uniform and Marines in battle armor moved purposefully back and forth through the ship, though most stepped to the side to leave a clear path for Master Sergeant Cobber's squad. On several bulkheads, virtual displays acted as windows, giving a view of the battlefield outside. Bale glanced at them as they went past, but couldn't get a good look, just the impression of a hell of a lot of warships. He didn't know enough about starships to know whether more of them were Naboo than not. He couldn't actually remember how large the Naboo First Fleet was.
Bell was escorted to an otherwise empty, medium-sized room with a single long table at the center. Most of the Marines followed him and Master Sergeant Cobber inside, though at some signal he couldn't hear, two remained outside, closing the hatch behind them. "It's a conference room," Cobber said in answer to his unspoken question. "You'll be moved to a stateroom later, Your Highness, but until then, we'll stay with you." "I understand." Bail sat down in a chair as Cobber and the other Marines removed their helmets. Coyle, who had stayed out in the corridor, turned out not to be the only clone. Two of the other three Marines beside Cobber were clones as well, while the third turned out to be a green-skinned Twi'lek male whose helmet had been modified to fit his Leku. "Is there any way I can see what's going on outside?" Cobber showed him how to manipulate the controls of the table's inset holoprojector, pulling up a composite hologram put together by the thousands of sensors attached to the outsides of the Indomitable and her fellowships in the Naboo fleet. "It's the same view that anyone else in the fleet could pull up," she explained. "There's nothing classified here." Bail didn't think that he had ever properly appreciated how large the Royal Naboo Space Navy really was, especially considering that it hadn't existed 15 years ago. The oldest ship in the fleet, which was back in the Naboo system, not here, was barely a decade old. The first fleet, which comprised roughly a third of the ships in the fleet, was bigger than anything most systems could provide. Half again the size of the Alderaanian civil fleet. 4 massive battle stars, the Naboo equivalent to Republic Star Destroyers and Trade Federation Dreadnoughts, formed the core of the fleet. Accompanying them were huge, sleek battle cruisers, smaller than the battle stars, but each one still almost a kilometer in length. They were escorted by groups of heavy cruisers and squadrons of light cruisers and destroyers. What seemed like hundreds of ships in total. Bail couldn't imagine what had gone through the heads of the Republic and Trade Federation captains when the flotilla had come out of hyperspace and seen the entirety of the Naboo First Fleet waiting for them. Probably a lot of profanity. Bail spent a few minutes looking for the Trade Federation flotilla before realizing there was nothing left of it. Master Sergeant Cobber hadn't been exaggerating when she had said the flotilla had been completely destroyed. At the current skill of the hologram, the closest Bail could come to identifying even the wreckage of the Federation ships were a few large pieces of debris that were vaguely recognizable as probably having once belonged to a star frigate. Several vulture droids floated dead in the space between ships, but the vast majority of starfighters cutting their way through the debris field were Naboo N1s. Escape pods inched away from the warship fleet at sublight speeds. Bail was glad to see that the Naboo didn't seem to have any interest in going after them. The Republic ships that had accompanied Resolute were in better condition than the Federation ones, but only because a few of them still existed as more than wreckage. The wedge shape of Resolute was visible in the hologram, attached to Indomitable, Valiant, and Revenge, and surrounded by a flock of smaller Naboo escorts. Only one of the similarly shaped but smaller star cruisers that had accompanied Resolute was still extant, now overshadowed by the massive form of a battle star, and attached by pressure tunnels to a pair of battle cruisers and a heavy cruiser. Fewer than half a dozen of Resolute's escort ships remained, all of them in the process of being boarded by Naboo units. Far off in the distance, in orbit 1 light-hour from the star, Bail could see the Republic space station that occupied the system. I wondered what they had thought of the battle. It must have been a horrendously one-sided battle. It hadn't felt like that from inside Resolute, but the flagship had probably been in the center of the flotilla, protected by her escorts and the Trade Federation ships. She wouldn't have taken the brunt of the battle early on. "How did you know we were coming here?" Bail said. "There must be dozens of routes from Naboo to Coruscant." Master Sergeant Cobber shrugged. "Good intelligence, I suppose." One of the clones, Bail didn't know his name, said. Her Majesty is guided. Bale looked at Cobber in surprise, but she just shrugged again. That's a possibility, too.
Guided by who?
The ancestors, the clone said, in all seriousness. His fellow looked uncomfortable, but the Twi'lek was nodding. Bale would have put good intelligence over divine intervention any day, but considering that there was at least one Jedi involved, it was probably a wise choice to hedge his bets. Instead, he just asked, "Is there any way to get a playback of the battle?" "Yes, Your Highness." Cobber showed him what controls to use. The Naboo systems were different enough from the Alderaanian and Galactic Standard ones that they weren't intuitive to Bale, which either said something about the Naboo mindset or was a clever means of keeping unauthorized personnel from using them. He watched the battle sped up, forcing himself not to see it as a scene in a holothriller, but as something real. Something that had happened recently, and something that people had died in. Actually, in a holothriller, it probably would have been called unrealistic. When he had left Coruscant, the SOB had still been trying to figure out where Amidala had gotten the money to pay for a fleet that rivaled anything any single system in the Republic could produce. Any way you looked at it, it had been a slaughter. The Republic flotilla had jumped out of hyperspace into the waiting jaws of a Confederate trap. Most of the Federation units, already damaged from the battle in the Naboo system, had gone down quickly. The Capital ships and the Republic ships had put up more of a fight, but they were hopelessly outnumbered and outgunned. The only reason the battle had taken as long as it had was that the Naboo had clearly wanted to take the Republic capital ships whole in order to board them. When the playback had finished, leaving Bale staring at the hologram of the First Fleet in its current configuration, he felt a little breathless. There was an undercurrent there that might be fear or awe, or both, because he had read the same reports as everyone else in the Senate on the Confederacy's military capabilities, but this was the first time that he had ever actually seen it and really started to understand what a drawn-out war would mean. He had made the decision to ask the Senate to declare war on the Confederacy, knowing full well that in the blood fervor that had followed the faked broadcast, he hadn't known it was faked at the time, that the Senate wouldn't think twice about the phrasing he had been up all night working on. He hadn't dared Calm Brea or Padme to ask, knowing that Dooku was having him surveilled. Had only briefly had the opportunity to talk with Mon and a few of the other delegation senators on planet about it. They had known already that Padme was going to make her move within the next few months. Bale had assumed that the execution of the two Jedi was it. In retrospect, he should have known that Obi-Wan would never have killed a Jedi, and even if he had been put into the position where he had been forced to, neither he nor Padme would have broadcast it on the holonet for the entire galaxy to see, no matter how dire the circumstances. Bale considered Obi-Wan a pretty good friend, but apparently he didn't know him as well as he thought he did. Even though the Confederacy and the Republic had been clashing intermittently for months now, none of it was in the core worlds. Alderaan was far removed from the conflict. The closest Bale had ever come to fighting for his life was turning away pirates on one of the Alderaanian-patrolled hyperlands during his mandatory service. But even that had been at a remove. No one was going to allow one of the heirs to Alderaan to actually risk his life if it could be avoided. He hadn't realized what war actually meant. Had just seen the public declaration as a stepping stone to getting the Confederacy the sovereignty it needed. He hadn't found out that the broadcast had been faked until Obi-Wan had gotten in touch with him through one of the most complicated series of holonet relays Bale's communications people had ever seen. If Obi-Wan had been able to get through sooner, Bale might have made a different decision. But at the time, he had thought he was doing exactly what he and Padme had agreed on. He must have been quiet a few minutes too long, because he jumped when Master Sergeant Cobber made a satisfied sound, then pointed at something in a hologram. Bale shook himself, blinking, and saw that one of the remaining Republic light cruisers was spitting out flurries of escape pods. A few minutes later, the two Naboo heavy cruisers who had been attached to it broke the connection and sped away. The moment they were out of range, the Republic cruiser exploded in a burst of energy that briefly whited out the entire sector of the hologram. Bale's mouth went dry. He had to lick his lips before he asked, "What's going to happen to the survivors?" Cobber shrugged. "Probably the station will send an SAR ship to pick them up once we've gone. We don't commit war crimes, unlike the Trade Federation." Her comlink squawked, and she stepped away from the table to mutter into it, leaving Bale to stare at the hologram. One after another, the remaining Republic escorts spat out escape pods, were released by their Naboo captors, and then exploded, until only the Star Cruiser and Resolute herself were left. When the escape pods began leaving the Star Cruiser, he looked away so that he didn't have to watch it be destroyed, telling himself that he'd watch it when it came time for Resolute to die. "You did this, Organa," he reminded himself. "You started the war." Brea would have said that the Trade Federation had started the war when they invaded Naboo 13 years ago. But Bale had been the one who had spoken the words that made it a legal reality. Maybe that was only a technicality, but he had still been the one to call for a declaration of war. Cobber finished her conversation and returned to his side, glancing at the hologram. "Admiral Rioni and Captain Kalani will be along as soon as we've detached, Your Highness." Bale licked his lips again. "I see," he said, then gestured at the hologram. "Is that standard practice?" "Yes, Your Highness." She didn't seem bothered by it. "No point in leaving the enemy something they can patch up and use against us." Even Bale couldn't find anything at fault with that, though he felt himself shudder at the casual phrase, "the enemy." The Trade Federation was one thing. They hadn't done much business on Alderaan even before Bale and Brea had painstakingly begun unwinding their connections in the wake of the occupation of Naboo, and so were comfortably considered alien on Alderaan and most of its colony worlds. But the Republic itself? That was something else entirely. Bale had talked it over dozens of times in the past decade, since Padme or Obi-Wan had first quietly said the dreaded word, secession. And while he knew, down to his bones, that the Republic was broken beyond all repair, it still hurt to hear enemy and have to know it meant the Republic. "You're the traitor now, Organa." Except that wasn't right, because Bale had done what he had to do, because he and Brea had agreed it was the only way to save Alderaan, because they couldn't be complicit, like so many other worlds were, to the crimes being committed by the Trade Federation and the other commerce guilds in the name of the Republic. A calm, female voice over the comm system announced Indomitable's immediate uncoupling from Resolute, and a few moments later Bale felt, or thought he felt, a very faint vibration beneath his feet as the Battlestar's propulsion units kicked in. He stared at the hologram, watching the small figures of the Battlestar and the two battlecruisers move away from the Star Destroyer. It had already released all of its escape pods, which were rushing away from the ship at top speed. 5 minutes later, once the Naboo ships and the escape pods were all out of the blast radius, it exploded. Bale flinched despite himself, because like everyone else in the Republic, he had been taught to believe that Star Destroyers, some of the biggest weapons intelligent life had ever created, were nearly indestructible. They were the core of the Republic fleet, the pinnacle of warship development, and now this one was gone. blasted into pieces, too small to show up on Indomitable's sensors. Bale stared at the space where it had been, the space where the Star Cruiser and the Republic escort ships had been, and tried to remind himself that this was a good thing, that the Republic was the enemy now. A decade ago, most of the Senate had been openly dismissive of the rumors that Naboo was putting together a home fleet. 10 years ago, the court battles between Naboo and the Trade Federation had been dragging on with no end in sight. Obi-Wan Kenobi had been very publicly raked over the coals in the Supreme Court and had just barely escaped being arrested for murder. Amidala had banned first all commerce guilds, and then a few months later, all Republic officials from entering the Naboo system, and the Trade Federation and the other commerce guilds were openly looking around the galaxy for their next target. Bail remembered sitting in the summer palace on Alderaan with Brea, watching the holonet coverage of the public relations disaster that had been the trial of Newt Gunray, and knowing that something had irrevocably changed in the Republic. He hadn't known what, then. 3 years later, when the Trade Federation had tried the same trick with Pantora and the Naboo home fleet had broken the blockade, no one in the Senate had been laughing anymore. He was still staring at the hologram when the hatch opened behind them. Bail, seeing the Marines come to attention, got to his feet and tried to remember the name of the commander of the First Fleet. Prince Consort Bail Organa of Alderaan, Admiral, Cobber said, her voice professional. Thank you, Master Sergeant, said the Admiral, a tall, golden-skinned woman in Naboo fleet uniform. That will be all. The Marine saluted, then left, leaving Bail alone in the conference room with the Admiral and a man he assumed was Indomitable's captain, a dreamy-eyed Arcanian offshoot whose white skin was shockingly pale against the blue of his uniform. I don't think I've ever been so glad to be on a ship under attack, Admiral, Bail said, holding out his hand to the woman. Her grip was firm and dry. Admiral Gina Rioni, Royal Naboo Space Navy, she said. This is Isvan Kalani, captain of the RNS Indomitable. It's a pleasure, Your Highness, Kalani said. He had a distinct Naboo accent that was at odds with his species, which usually didn't get far from Arcania or its colony worlds. Not least because it allowed the First Fleet to be the ones to show the Trade Federation why it's a very bad idea to mess with the Naboo fleet. I'm getting that impression, Captain. I believe the Galactic Republic may be as well. Rioni and Kalani both smiled. They sat at the Admiral's gesture, neither of the fleet officers glancing at the hologram. There's a stateroom being prepared for you, Your Highness, but I thought you might want to be present for our next transmission to Naboo, Rioni said. Indomitable's communications officers assure me that we should be able to send one to Alderaan, too. Bail felt his shoulders slump for a moment in relief. Thank you, he said. For a moment, the cool professionalism dropped out of Rioni's voice. I have a wife and a husband back on Naboo, she said. I know what it's like to leave someone behind. Bail nodded back in understanding. Will Captain Kenobi be joining us? He asked. He couldn't imagine Obi-Wan passing up an opportunity to speak to Padme, not after what Newt Gunray had tried to do to him. Rioni and Kalani glanced at each other. Then Kalani said slowly, I'm afraid that's one of the reasons that we need to contact Naboo as soon as possible. He isn't dead, Bail said, barely able to imagine the kind of vengeance Padme would wreak on whoever was responsible for killing her husband. The Jedi wouldn't... Aside from one knight we captured on the flagship, the Jedi aren't here, Admiral Rioni said bluntly. And neither is Captain Kenobi. Despite the warmth of the morning, Padme was chilled. Her skin felt cold to the touch, and her mind had the slow, sluggish quality she associated with dull winter days. She felt as though she was wading through thick mud, incapable of breaking free. The quilt she had wrapped herself in didn't do much to help the shadow that lay over her, but she held on to it anyway. "Could he do that to me?" she asked, looking between Obi-Wan and Anakin. "Could he make me not remember?" She hesitated, then asked the question she wasn't sure she actually wanted an answer to. "Could you?" Obi-Wan dropped his gaze. "Yes," he said. "Yes, I could do it, which means that Palpatine certainly could. He's at least as powerful as I am, and there are things that he'll do that I never would. What I'm not certain of is why he would have done so. Surely keeping a memory would be more important to him than erasing his tracks." Anakin, lounging against a pillar near the balcony doors, snorted and shook his head. "No, it isn't," he said. "Palpatine can do anything he wants, but only as long as he can make other people think he isn't doing it. All his power right now comes from being the guy that everyone thinks is harmless, since the Queen doesn't want to give him any actual authority. That's right, isn't it?" Padme nodded. "I bet that's going to change sometime soon," Anakin added thoughtfully. He clenched his fist, the leather of his gloves straining over his knuckles. "He isn't stupid, you know? He's petty, and he's cruel, and he's a blasted murderer about a million times over, but he's not stupid. He's just very good at playing stupid." "The last thing any of us think," Padme told him coolly, "is that Palpatine is stupid." Anakin winced at her tone. "I didn't mean... That's not what I meant. I don't think you think..." "You may want to stop while you're behind, Anakin," Obi-Wan told him kindly. He was sitting on the same couch as Padme, though at the opposite end of it, out of arm's reach. Anakin winced again. "Right. Palpatine knows that you're afraid of him, but you suspected what he was and were going to tell the Queen. You probably would have done so by now. So he's all right with you being more afraid of him than you already are, and the fact that you don't know if you actually told him anything makes it even better. For him, I mean, not for you, obviously." He trailed off, looking at Obi-Wan for confirmation. Obi-Wan shrugged. "I won't even pretend to know what a Sith Lord is thinking," he said. "But that does seem likely. You're sure you can't remember anything?" he added to Padme. She shook her head. "I'm not even sure it was Palpatine," she admitted. "Because she couldn't. She couldn't remember anything that had happened between leaving Queen Amidala's sitting room to answer the door and turning up in their guest chambers. Just an overwhelming, nearly stifling sense of terror. The only reason that she had slept at all last night was because, under extreme protest, Obi-Wan had used the Force to put her into a dreamless sleep." Anakin had been slumped in the chair beside her when she had finally woken up a few hours ago, while Obi-Wan had clearly passed the night on one of the couches in the sitting room. Padme might have slept, but she wasn't sure that either of the Jedi had. "Of course it was Palpatine," Anakin scoffed. "It has to be. Who else would it have been?" He glanced at Obi-Wan. He shrugged. "We don't know everything that's happened in this universe," he said. "There could be many more players in the game than we know of. There almost certainly are." "It isn't a game," Padme said sharply, pulling the quilt she was clutching more tightly around herself. Obi-Wan gave her an apologetic look. "Of course it isn't, m'lady. I didn't mean to say that it was." Padme worked a hand free from the quilt to push her hair back from her face. "What if I told him?" she asked, slightly mollified by his tone. "What if I did tell him everything?" "Then you'd be dead," Anakin said. He mirrored Obi-Wan's apologetic gesture when Padme gave him a sharp look, ducking his head slightly. Or at least he would have taken the Ouroboros. He can tell that you're not Force-sensitive. He wouldn't have had any problem taking it from you if he knew you had it. They all looked at the coffee table, where the Ouroboros was sitting on top of several layers of silk scarves Padme had found in her closet. According to Anakin and Obi-Wan, it was quiescent to their Jedi senses, essentially drained of power, and nothing more than a particularly ugly piece of jewelry. Something about it still made Padme shudder to look at it, though she couldn't put her finger on what precisely that was. If he'd known, he would have taken it, Anakin said again. Obi-Wan reached out, careful not to let his bare skin touch the bracelet, and flipped a fold of the silk scarf over the Ouroboros. He and Anakin relaxed minutely as soon as it was out of sight, wrapped in insulating layers of silk. Padme didn't know what it was the blasted thing did to them, but they had both gone on edge as soon as Padme had brought it out to make sure she still had it. Obi-Wan, Padme said reluctantly, and saw him look up. Can you go into my head? Find out if I told him anything? No! Anakin said sharply, before Obi-Wan even had a chance to respond. Padme stared at him, shocked at the alarm in his voice. Anakin had actually pushed away from the column he was leaning against, taking a step towards them before he stopped. Why not? She asked. It's very dangerous, Obi-Wan said quickly. And I'm not trained as a consular. My talents are elsewhere. You removed the mental trigger from Captain Rex because the alternative was killing him, Obi-Wan said, which I might have done anyway if I had slipped up. And I'm still paying for it, he added reluctantly, off Anakin's warning look. I won't do it, Padme. I'm not sure that I could. If Palpatine knew anything, we'd all be dead, Anakin added, scowling. The expression didn't seem to be directed at either of them. Obi-Wan glanced at him, a frown curving his features.
You said that already.
You didn't know the bastard. Anakin flexed his hands again, as though thinking about wrapping them around Palpatine's throat. I had him inside my head, Obi-Wan. He ripped my skull open and shoved something else inside, and I'll never be able to... He stopped abruptly, apparently aware that both Obi-Wan and Padme were staring at him.
Oh, Annie, she began.
He glanced aside. I've got to take a shower, he said.
Anakin, Obi-Wan said, starting to rise.
Anakin blew past him without even looking at him, the door to his room slamming a moment later. Padme turned to stare after him in surprise.
Annie...
He was already gone. She looked back at Obi-Wan, whose distress, for once, was evident on his face.
Is he all right? What was he talking about?
Obi-Wan sank back onto the couch, dropping his head into his hands.
Terrible things happened to Anakin while he was gone, was all he said, his voice slightly muffled.
Padme pulled the folds of the quilt around herself and leaned her head against the back of the couch. She wanted the awful cold inside herself to go away, wanted something to clear the fog from her head. She wanted none of this to have ever happened.
Are we in danger? She asked Obi-Wan.
I don't know, he said, looking up and pushing a hand back through his hair.
Maybe. I don't think it's as bad as Anakin believes, but he knows Palpatine much better than I do. My instincts tell me that Palpatine has other things to worry about, though, and our presence here is... unlikely, to say the least. And I assume that Queen Amidala uses decoys, just like you do on occasion, he added, with the ghost of a smile.
She does, Padme said. It had come up in some of her conversations with the other handmaidens.
Sabe was shot once when she was pretending to be me. Pretending to be the queen, I mean. She showed me the scar. They sat in silence for a few minutes, listening to the sound of the shower running in the refresher attached to Anakin's bedroom. Finally, Padme said, Obi-Wan, why am I cold? What? I'm cold, she said again. I have been since last night. See? She held out one hand towards him. After a moment's hesitation, Obi-Wan stood and came over to sit down next to her, clasping her hand between his. You are cold, he said, then brushed his knuckles against her cheek, frowning a little. His eyes went hooded for a moment, his gaze gone distant. It's residual from whatever Palpatine did to you. I think I can do something about that. Do you want me to? Yes. She was trembling a little, his touch light against her skin. She didn't know what she wanted. She wanted his hands on her body. Padme swallowed, shutting her eyes. Obi-Wan didn't give any indication that he had registered either the motion or the thought, but his touch shifted slightly, pressing his fingertips instead of his knuckles against her cheek. Hold still, he said absently. This won't hurt. He was close enough that she could hear his breathing, and she found herself trying to match her own to it. After a moment, warmth spread out from the points of contact, four spread fingers against her jaw, and a thumb on her cheek. It radiated through her, chasing away the clinging shadows in her mind and the cold that had made her bones ache. Padme felt her breath release, a weight that she hadn't even realized she had been carrying, disintegrating into nothing. Better? Obi-Wan murmured. Yes. She could still feel the lingering touch of his mind on hers, or at least that was what she assumed it was. He started to take his hand away, and Padme, without really thinking about it, reached up and caught his wrist. Obi-Wan froze. She opened her eyes. Obi-Wan hadn't moved, close enough that she could count the gray hairs in his beard. Too many for someone so young. His clear blue eyes were faintly curious. Padme was still trying to decide what to do when he kissed her. His lips were cool against hers, as if he had drawn the ice from her body into his own. Padme opened her mouth against his, the quilts falling away from her as she released it to curve her hand against the back of Obi-Wan's neck, pulling him in closer. She could feel his pulse beating rapidly in his wrist. He pulled back to catch his breath, his eyes wide but dark with desire, and this time Padme was the one who leaned in. She kissed him slowly, lingeringly, learning the shape of him, feeling her body curve towards his. Obi-Wan's beard was rough against her cheeks. Somewhere in the distance, she heard the shower shut off, but she couldn't remember why that was important until Obi-Wan pulled away again. Anakin, he murmured. We can't. Padme didn't release her hold on his wrist. Obi-Wan, she said, it doesn't have to be either or. He didn't seem to have heard her, turning his face away as he frowned. I should not have done that, he said. But I wanted you to, Padme coaxed. And you wanted to. Obi-Wan looked back at her, his gaze troubled. Then his gaze flickered to her grip on his wrist. Padme let go of him, and he dropped his hand to his knee, clenching his fingers into a fist. I'm a Jedi Knight, he said. My desires aren't exactly supposed to be a compelling reason for anything. Padme touched the back of his hand with two fingers, watching him lift his gaze to study her. When was the last time you did something purely because he wanted to? His mouth twisted. More recently than you know. She only hesitated for an instant before asking, "Would you really have done it?" "Done what?" "Left the order."
There was a crash from behind them.
Obi-Wan looked over his shoulder at Anakin, who was staring at them with a face wiped blank with shock. The remains of a dropped glass shattered at his feet. Padme flinched, not knowing how much he had overheard, but it couldn't have been much or he would have reacted earlier.
"What?" Anakin said, sounding young and scared, as though his entire world had just come crashing down around him.
Obi-Wan bowed his head, a line of color rising along his cheekbones, barely visible beneath his beard.
"There is a difference," he said slowly, "between leaving the war and leaving the order. But, yes, I would have done it. And it might have come to leaving the order in the end."
"I don't understand," Anakin said in a small voice. Why would you do that? I thought everything was the same while I was gone." Padme stood up to go to him, then stopped as Anakin finally registered the broken glass in front of him and motioned her to stop. He stared blankly down at the glittering pile of glass fragments for a few seconds, then gestured with one hand. They rose up all at once, hanging shimmering in the sunlight for an instant, before he swept his hand sideways and they went flying into the nearest waste bin.
"You can't resign from the Order," he said to Obi-Wan, as though there hadn't been any interruption. "You're a master on the High Council."
"Well, I certainly can't now," Obi-Wan said. He was sitting hunched over, his shoulders drawn in. Padme hesitated, torn between the two men, then realized that this had nothing to do with her, as Anakin crossed swiftly to Obi-Wan and sank down in her recently vacated spot on the couch, shoving the discarded quilt aside. He was barefoot, his hair still damp from his shower, and his right arm glimmered gold in the sun that filtered through the windows. He hadn't put his glove on yet.
"What happened?" Anakin asked. Why would you?
Obi-Wan folded his fingers into his hair and didn't answer for a few moments, then said finally, "You accused me once of not knowing when I was being used by the High Council." Anakin frowned, then said, "Yeah, I remember. I was angry at you. I didn't expect you to actually, you know, do anything about it. What does that have to do with anything?"
Padme, hesitating, finally went to go sit down on Obi-Wan's other side. She remembered Obi-Wan's bitterness more than the few details he had spilled to her on Coruscant, remembered the sheer exhaustion in the set of his body, and his flat denial of Yoda's final order.
"I am not asking for permission, Master."
Without looking at Anakin, Obi-Wan said,
"Odrin changed everything. Not just what happened to you, and not just Vader. We began to lose the war. I don't know how so much could go so wrong so quickly," he added quietly, shaking his head.
Padme rested a hand on his shoulder, feeling the tension beneath her palm, and this time he didn't shrug her off.
"Jedi died. A lot of Jedi. A lot of clones. Hundreds of starships. We lost the shipyards on Alantian 6. We lost entire sectors in the mid-rim and expansion zone. Dozens of worlds. In fighting, or many just left. It was as though the entire Republic had begun to fall apart all at once."
Anakin looked at Padme over Obi-Wan's bowed head, and she nodded once, short. She could still remember the shock of the notifications, the hours of arguments in the convocation chamber.
Obi-Wan didn't seem to notice the exchange. I was deployed on more than half a dozen planets in 2 months, he said. It was very difficult. Anakin flinched. Soldier that he was, he had to know what that meant, what it had taken out of Obi-Wan. Vader, Obi-Wan began. Then he stopped and shook his head. Anakin had gone, if possible, even more tense at the mention of the name. There were Jedi who were dying because of me, Obi-Wan said elliptically. Because he wanted to hurt me. I didn't know. I thought. He struggled for a moment with the words. I don't know now, he said finally. If the rest of the council knew something I didn't, or if they merely suspected. Or if they didn't care at all. You were declared missing at first, but the council changed it to killed in action while I was off-world and unable to vote. I was certain that you weren't dead. I could feel you in the Force. I could sense. He stopped again. Bleed over, Anakin said, his voice uneven. From Vader. Obi-Wan's nod was short and jerky. Yes, I didn't know that then. I thought. I was so certain that you were still alive, that you had been captured by the Separatists. We had to retreat very quickly from Odrin. There was no time to search for survivors. I asked permission over and over again to go back. I even went to the Supreme Chancellor. I was denied and sent out on deployment again. More Jedi died. More people died, and it was all so useless. No, Anakin began automatically, then stopped when Padme glared at him. In a smaller voice, he added, you believe in the Republic, in democracy. The war has not been about the Republic for a long time, Obi-Wan said. Perhaps it never was. It certainly never was, rather. But I didn't know that then. I was unwilling to realize it then. He sighed. A long time ago, on a mission, someone asked me how I could fight, how I could kill. Jedi that I am, peacekeeper that I was then. I told her that it was because I never fought for anything that I would not die for. She said that that was an act of cowardice, that it took more courage to live than to die. For a moment, a smile touched his lips. It must have been Satine who'd said that to him. He rested his forearms on his thighs, his hands clasped loosely together between his knees. I would kill for the Republic, for the Order, for many reasons. There are fewer that I would die for, and I wasn't fighting for any of them anymore. I was just fighting. I was fighting someone else's war, for reasons that no longer made any sense, for something that didn't exist anymore. Because it was more convenient to have me there, on some battlefield somewhere, than anywhere else. Because I made a better weapon than I did a knight. And I couldn't. He stopped. I couldn't live with it anymore. With myself. Anakin started to say something, then stopped. If Obi-Wan registered it, he made no sign. This war, the war, it's changed the Jedi. The Order, our duty. He clenched one hand into a fist. I do know when I'm being used. It's just that normally I can accept the reasons behind it. This time I couldn't. You never told me any of this, Anakin whispered.
Obi-Wan closed his eyes. I've never said it out loud before. Anakin shook his head, but it seemed to be more disbelief than denial.
So you would have... You would have just left? He said. You would have just left?
Obi-Wan passed a hand over his face, visibly trying and failing to pull himself together. Padme could still feel him trembling very slightly beneath her hand.
Not exactly, he said. I was going to look for you.
Anakin just stared at him, his expression blank and uncomprehending. But I wasn't. The Separatists didn't have me. You know that.
We didn't know that then, Padme said, when Obi-Wan didn't answer, his head in his hands.
Anakin's gaze flickered to her.
Did you... You knew about this? He sounded a little hurt.
No, she didn't know,
Obi-Wan said, his voice slightly muffled. Padme said, I knew a little. She licked her lips, wondering how much to tell him, then finally added the most relevant part. I was going to go with him. We were going to look for you together. But you were there, on Mustafar.
But if I hadn't gone there, Anakin said, then you would have...
It doesn't matter now, Obi-Wan said. You were there. I didn't actually do anything I couldn't have taken back. And even if I had... His voice quiet for an instant. It doesn't matter now, he repeated. I suppose the war is over, after all, one way or another.
Anakin shook his head, clearly trying and failing to reconcile what he had just heard with what he thought he knew.
You were going to do this for me?
Padme saw Obi-Wan's surprisingly long lashes quiver as he shut his eyes. His voice was barely more than a whisper.
Yes.
But I wasn't... Anakin stood up abruptly and took a few steps away, burying his hands in his hair. You'd never leave the Order!
It doesn't matter, Obi-Wan repeated. It didn't happen. What I would have done... He shook his head. It doesn't matter.
It does matter!
No, it doesn't!
Obi-Wan's voice rose for an instant, then settled out again.
It can't. Nothing happened.
Anakin turned back towards him, moving with sharp, uneven motions.
It does matter, he said again. Making that decision, making the decision that there's something, someone, anything more important in your life than the Order, that changes you, and you...
I know that, Obi-Wan snapped without looking up. Do you think I don't? Do you think I didn't know what I was doing when I made that decision? I knew what I was giving up. I knew that there was no choice at all.
Anakin froze, staring at him with his hands still buried in his hair.
You're an idiot, he said. Obi-Wan actually choked out a laugh, looking up for the first time.
Coming from you, that's probably a compliment, he said.
It isn't a compliment, it's the truth, Anakin snapped, finally taking his hands out of his hair. You're a Jedi Master, Obi-Wan. You're not supposed to... I wasn't even there.
I didn't know that.
Obi-Wan was on his feet in an instant, leaving Padme sitting on the couch, watching the two Jedi and feeling her skin prickle.
Do you think I could live with myself if I left you to Dooku's tender mercies when I could have done something about it?
Yes, Anakin almost shouted. He did. I am not him, Anakin.
Obi-Wan's eyes flashed. And for a moment, Padme thought she saw lightning crackle around his fingertips. But when she looked again, it was gone.
And from what you've said of him, I'm glad of that.
Anakin clenched his fists, metal fingers gleaming.
I'm not worth you compromising your soul.
Unfortunately, Anakin, that decision was never yours to make. Obi-Wan's voice had gone cool again, though Padme saw distress flicker across his face. Anakin flinched. Out of the two of us, I'm supposed to be the one who makes stupid decisions. Yes, well, in your absence, I'm afraid someone had to take up the mantle, Obi-Wan said. He was still tense, clearly expecting to be shouted at some more. You weren't supposed to find out.
What? You were just going to hold me out of Lola Sayu or the Stygian or wherever Dooku is hiding his prisoners these days and not mention that you weren't a Jedi anymore? Did you think I wasn't going to notice?
There is a difference, Obi-Wan repeated, between leaving the Order and leaving the war. And given that I was mostly focused on finding you alive and not in a dozen pieces in a box in my tent, I wasn't exactly thinking that far ahead. That threw Anakin for a moment.
Why would I have been dismembered in a box?
He said blankly. Then he went white as understanding penetrated.
Vader.
I was not, perhaps, thinking entirely clearly, Obi-Wan said, with what Padme thought was a remarkable calm on his part. Given the 17 dead Jedi whose heads I had already received.
Oh, my...
Anakin sank down onto the couch, his head in his hands.
I didn't know, Obi-Wan, I swear I didn't...
Obi-Wan's gaze flickered to Padme, and she looked down, trying not to think about the creeping feeling of being watched that had haunted her for the weeks after Odrin. Vader, she knew now, but she hadn't known that then. Her own hands clenched into fists, remembering her nightmare. Remembering Anakin's head staring blindly up from her desk, swathed in silk, and his severed hands. And Darth Vader, advancing on her with his hand outstretched.
Don't let yourself be destroyed as Anakin Skywalker was.
There's no way you could have known, Obi-Wan said, his voice gentling a little. He hesitated for a moment before stepping forward, curving one hand over Anakin's skull. Padme saw Anakin lean into the touch, his eyes shut tight. You're still an idiot, he said. Well, I learned from the best, Obi-Wan said. His voice had gone fond again, and when he started to withdraw his hand, Anakin reached up and caught his wrist, fitting his metal fingers precisely over the spot where Padme had held onto Obi-Wan earlier. Anakin, I don't regret making that decision, even if it didn't come to pass. It was the right thing to do, even if it wasn't the Jedi one. Yoda and Windu would have killed you, Anakin said. They would have had to find me first, Obi-Wan said. And I know a few tricks even they don't. Anakin shook his head, though it didn't seem to be denial of the statement. Why in blazes would you do that for me? He said. Because we love you, Padme said. Anakin glanced up. Well, that was your first mistake, he said, his tone faintly bitter. Padme scooted over on the couch so that she could put an arm around his shoulders. He was tense, almost as tense as Obi-Wan had been, and she could feel him holding himself away from her. Love is never a mistake, she said. Anakin didn't say anything. There was a cough from the opposite end of the room, where the outer door opened into the narrow entry. Padme saw both Obi-Wan and Anakin jerk in surprise, starting to reach for their lightsabers, though Anakin wasn't wearing his, before they recognized Rabe, accompanied by a handmaiden that Padme vaguely recognized as once having served to the former Queen Jamilia in their own universe.
Is this a bad time? Rabe asked.
The Jedi cruiser Paladin had an audience waiting for it as it landed in the temple docking complex. One of the hangar bays had been completely cleared of all of the ships, leaving it empty except for the waiting members of the Jedi High Council, a dozen cloaked and masked temple guards, and a handful of other knights and masters. Paladin touched down gently. As its systems began shutting down, its landing ramp lowered, revealing the cloaked form of Mace Windu standing at the entrance. He came down the ramp, followed by four Jedi flanking a single hooded figure whose hands were in binders in front of him. The temple guards came forward to transfer custody. Adi Gallia, the senior master in Yoda's and Mace's absence, came forward to push the figure's hood back, revealing Obi-Wan Kenobi's bruised features.
"Hello there," he said, smirking. "It has been a while, Master Gallia, hasn't it?"
"Get him out of here," Adi said. The temple guards took him away. Kenobi walked with his back straight and his chin up, and he never looked back. "Did you hear about the flotilla?" Adi said, crossing to Mace. At his nod, she added, "How are you going to explain this to the Supreme Chancellor? He's been here almost every day checking on Master Yoda." Mace's eyes were fixed on the figure of Kenobi, almost lost amongst the ranks of the temple guards surrounding him.
"I don't know," he said. "But he gave up any right to have a say in what the Order does when he resigned 12 years ago."